Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Welcome to this week's program of Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. If you're like me, you've been paying a lot of attention lately to the burgeoning U.S. federal deficit. In 2012, annual spending by the federal government is up by $1 trillion more than it was in 2007. With the recession and weak recovery, the revenue is little changed. The result, as most of you know, our nation's reported debt has increased by $5.2 trillion in the past 4 years. And I don't even know what $1 trillion looks like. The federal government, which is collectively us, now owes over $16 trillion, as you know, or that's about $15,000 for every man, woman, and child, including newborn. So I guess they say, hi, sweetie, welcome to the world, here's your bill. To baby boomers like us, it's not just academic. The issue is vitally important to those of us at middle age and up, either retired or saving and investing for retirement. Like you, I worry about the threat of runaway inflation when the federal government's spending $1 trillion more each year than it takes in, and this means more dollars chasing limited resources. The Fed has been artificially keeping interest rates so low that it's hard to generate income or compounding of our asset growth, too. The good news is our guest today says that the reported national financial crisis is a persistent delusion and that, in fact, the deficit doesn't matter because our federal government can generate electronic funds to pay our debts and bail itself out and has been able to do that for years. He promises to reveal myths about the U.S. dollar and the money supply and why the government has been keeping the truth from us for so long. Even goes one step further and tells us we no longer need federal taxation and we can eliminate the IRS. Round of applause, please. And of course, with all those IRS agents out of work, it may increase the unemployment rate because who in the heck would want to hire an ex-IRS agent? Our guest is Dean Windham, and he's a lifelong small business owner, inventor, and author of a most interesting book titled All About Equity Spending with a Love Story. Now, please note, Dean's book is not a romance novel. In fact, in the intro, he asks readers to abide by two rules of engagement. Let him present the whole picture and be willing to think outside the box. Well, his ideas certainly contrast with the Tea Party in the current political debate in D.C., and we'll try to think outside the box. Hello, Dean, and welcome to our program.
Hello, Roy, and thanks for having me.
Let's get right to it here. Why doesn't the deficit matter anymore, and why shouldn't we consider it when we vote next month in the election?
Okay, let me back up just one little second here. The book does have a romance novel in it.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. But it's got a fictional story that provides talking points for the dialogue. And it's a compelling, poignant story, and it appeals a lot to the younger generation. Now, as far as the deficit doesn't matter, the coming election, I'm aghast that it hasn't been more front and center. That should be all the candidates are talking about, $16 trillion deficit. And it's business as usual. All our federal employees are being paid, and it's not even a bump in the road, but they make it sound like we're doomed and gloomed and we're going to go bankrupt, which, by the way, it is impossible for the United States of America to declare bankruptcy. We agree on that, correct?
I'm not sure. I guess that's why. Why exactly is that? Well, I guess because they can only print more money. But
the way it's explained to me, my attorney, as a matter of fact, I interviewed him on this very subject, and he says there's no such thing as a bankruptcy court for a country to begin with.
And
there's no one to even hear the petition. And basically, even if there were, your assets, if they exceed your debt, you can't declare bankruptcy.
Yeah,
our assets collectively are incalculable. So that's just a scare tactic by some people who just don't stop and think about it before they say something, because that'll never happen. It can't happen.
Yeah, that can't happen, but it still worries me that we can get in trouble like maybe Greece or Spain or some of these countries struggling around the world.
Well, you know, that's Greece and Ireland is one I use an example in the book. They did a little equity spending of their own. They spent more money than they were taking in tax revenue. And we came down on them. And that is, the financial market came down on them and said, hey, you can't do that. You have to borrow money and have some austere measures and all this, that, and the other. And then we turn right around and have quantitative easing too. And you're familiar with quantitative easing too, correct?
Oh, very damn. Quantitative easing one, or just quantitative easing, I guess they called it at the time.
Well, quantitative easing one is the proof. Now, my position is we haven't borrowed money from anyone. We've been electronically generating the funds to meet our federal expenditures with the false belief that we're actually borrowing money from other countries, or maybe individuals here in the United States, which, think about it, $1 trillion, like you were saying in the intro, you can't even imagine it. But let's take quantitative easing, too.
Yeah.
Back in June, I think it was July of 2010 or 2011, Senator Sessions of Alabama called both Mr. Geithner, Secretary of the Treasury, and Apples Bernanke, Ben Bernanke, the Chairman of the Federal Reserve. I call him Apples, and you'll understand why in just a moment. And he's talking to him about this quantitative easing too, which he asked him, he says, Mr. Bernanke, we understand that you and Mr. Geithner got together and you purchased $600 billion, would it be now, $600 billion dollars of United States securities and put it in the Treasury to meet our federal expenditures. Now, I'm paraphrasing. He didn't go in quite this much there.
Yeah.
And Mr. Bernanke, he says, that's correct. He says, boy, that's just wonderful. He says, where did you get all that money? And Apples Bernanke, he says, we electronically generated. Now, Senator Sessions, as I put this in the book, in order to be cagey and not cause an economic financial collapse, he wants to give this analogy. He says, so you're telling me, now I'm apologizing right off up front here, Roy. I'm going to catch you a little off guard if you're not familiar with this subject. And again, don't hold it against me. But he says, you're telling me you put more apples on the market, making the apples that are already out there worth less. Now, Mr. Bernanke, to his discredit, now, I like Mr. Bernanke. I like everybody, as a matter of fact. I especially like Mr. Bernanke. But he says, that's correct. Now, you see the discrepancy here. He's comparing a commodity, apples, to a and they both start with a C, but that's the only similarity there. You can put more apples on the market, and if you flood the market with apples, it's going to drive the price down. And if you don't sell them in that season, they're going to rot, and you lose everything. You can print $50 quadrillion trillion, put it in a warehouse someplace. It would have to be as big as the state of New Hampshire. And as long as when you take some of that money out, you get something of value in return. You meet a federal expenditure, a legitimate federal expenditure. It doesn't affect anything, and that has been proven beyond any shadow of a doubt. Quantitative easing too, which most people haven't even heard about, didn't cause so much as a ripple on the economic pond.
You're saying that the money actually wasn't released. I thought they released additional reserves to the banks through quantitative easing, that thereby would supposedly stimulate more loans and more spending.
Well, that aspect of it didn't even come into play. Mr. Bernanke was a straw man.
Yeah.
He was there, but he wasn't there. He proved his, to a great extent, not completely, but to a great extent, the irrelevance of the Federal Reserve Bank, because all it did was allow Timothy Geithner, Secretary of the Treasury, to issue the checks for federal expenditures.
Yeah.
You see, and you all this other borrowing and saving and all this, and that still goes on as usual. But that quantitative easing too unequivocally proved that we as a people, through our government, we own the government, we own the printing press, we own the Treasury Department, we can electronically generate the funds necessary to meet federal expenditures. And your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, and effectively what happened is the Treasury issues notes, which the Federal Reserve, in effect, buys, and that therefore becomes an asset for the Federal Reserve, and they offset that by creating additional reserves for the banks, which become their liability offsetting the asset. But then the banks theoretically can go spread that money around, which does result in more money chasing a limited amount of resources, human capital, natural resources, and other capital out in the markets. And doesn't that ultimately potentially lead to real bad inflation? It seems like it would once we reach a full economy and getting rid of the stagflation.
Well, here's my take on it. I think you're overthinking it. Now, under the former tax and spend method, everything you just said is most probably true. With the new age way of meeting federal expenditures, let me qualify this by reiterating that there was absolutely no money actually produced. It was electronically produced. It was money on a ledger that the Treasury or the Secretary used as his basis for issuing the checks. You can say, we got $600 billion here today.
Yeah.
You see? There was no securities printed.
Yeah.
There was no bonds printed. It was all electronically done.
Yeah.
You follow me?
But what I'm saying is then when the government turns around and spends this money, which is more than they're taking in from taxpayers, but that does put more money into the economy, which the government is using to purchase, you know, to pay their employees, to pay Social Security, to pay whatever. Doesn't that lead to
Army,
an increase
Navy,
in
Air
money
Force, correct.
And eventually I would think would lead to inflation at some point because there's still the same amount
didn't.
Of total.
It didn't cause, it didn't actually, as we stated before, it didn't even cause a ripple on the economic pond.
Yeah.
There was no inflation due to quantitative easing too. It's just, I know, Roy, once you wrap your mind around it, it becomes so very, very simple. But until you do, it's kind of obscure. I understand that. But the fact is there were no treasuries securities printed up. There was no money printed up. Now, when these people, the Army, Navy, Air Force, bureaucrats, president, congressmen, senators, you know, the 12 federal employees that we have, the biggest employer in the country is the federal government, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, now, when all these people take their money to the bank to cash it, the Treasury Department knows how much money each bank needs to cover the checks.
Yeah.
We also own the Bureau of Engraving and Printing.
Yes, we do.
That cash is made available to the banks to cash those checks.
Yeah.
But very few people, now here's another way of another angle to look at it to where it becomes more clear. Very few people ever see the cash.
Yeah, that's
I know
true.
I don't.
No, the electronic deposits go right into their account generally.
So those 12 million employees that we met our federal deficit, federal expenditures, you know, most of them are just like you and me. They never see the cash. They pay the bills. Now, this is further illustrated. Now, with China borrowing $1 trillion supposedly from China, which my position is we never borrowed. And that can be fairly easily proven with common sense and simple logic. Just like we just proven that quantitative easing, too, didn't cause any economic adversities on the economic scene. Now, would you like to go into not borrowing money from China, that we don't really owe China anything?
Yeah, well, let me just, before we move on to there, let me express my concern, and I agree with you that QE2 has not shown any signs of increasing inflation or that type of negative impact. But what I'm worried about is if and when, which it never seems we get to, we reach what we call like full employment and the economy starts charging ahead, and you have all those additional, because there is buying power created for people through federal expenditures, and that's additional buying power out in the economy. And when we reach full employment, I worry that all that additional buying power is going to go after the limited resources that we have as a country. And I mean, they're huge, but they're still finite. It's not just infinite, although, of course, if the right policies are in effect, we're encouraging growth so that, you know, we're not necessarily limited long term. But I still worry about inflation once that so-called full employment is reached.
Now, as far as inflation, it's always been a problem. It's a problem with people, you know, fraud and theft. And another word for inflation is greed. To a certain extent, people wanting to charge a little more, make it a little bit more to his neighbor, and add a little bit more to that. As the dictionary defines it, it's a spiraling upper increase in prices. Everybody trying to make a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Now, so basically, that's going to always be a problem, and we're always going to have to be vigilant and do whatever we can as a nation to thwart that.
Yeah.
But you hit the nail on the head when you said unlimited resources. Again, if you think about the impact of quantitative easing too, it has proven that we do have unlimited financial resources. Are you with me there?
Yeah, we certainly have unlimited excess capacity right now, given the high unemployment rate and the fact that real incomes have, you know, declined over the past 4 years. You know, there's not a lot of demand. There's not as much demand out there from the public as we'd like to see, obviously, in a strong recovery. So perhaps, you know, QE2 works.
That's not exactly the point I was trying to make. All that is true. And you get your Pulitzer Prize-winning economist and people like that. And to go into the detail on the finer points, and you know, you can think this thing to death, but the point easing to $600 billion, not a ripple on the economic pond, has proven unlimited resources in that we have unlimited financial resources, irregardless of employment, unemployment, whatever the factor may be. It has proven we can electronically generate all the funds we need to do anything we want to do. So long as it's a legitimate federal expenditure, so long as you don't give the money away and you have 100% auditing of the system and you know where every penny goes. Roy,
and we can do that, unlike Greece, because they're such a small economy and they don't have the unlimited resources that the U.S. has.
Again, Greece can do it. Greece, this is going to spread worldwide. We're going to have in the future, and it's got to be soon, because this $6 trillion thing is not going away. It's just going to get bigger, and sooner or later, the powers that be are going to have to acknowledge, hey, we haven't borrowed a dime. We've just been printing the money.
Yeah.
And that's what they've been doing. they haven't been borrowing money. And we can, if we have time, I'd like to go over the, just one country, China. But this,
yeah, get
the thing
into that right now. I'd like to hear why we're not borrowing money from China, because that's what people always claim.
Yeah, well, this is just apply common sense and simple logic to the whole scenario. All right, first off, you got to get a communist-labeled country to borrow, to loan capitalist country $1 trillion. Now there's 100, 200 billion here and 200 billion there, and it's supposedly up to $1 trillion, okay? But
yeah,
let's just say $1 trillion at one time. Now, the International Monetary Exchange is 6 of their yen for one of our dollars.
Yeah.
Which throws the theory away that our dollar is worth less than a dollar. Our dollar is rock solid. It's worth a dollar. It has been for over 100 and some years. Okay. That's problem number one, is get a communist labeled. I hate to keep going off on rabbit trails when we're deer hunting here, but it's a communist labeled country, because there's no such thing as a true communist country anywhere on the basis. Never will be, and that's in my book. But let's leave that for another time. Second place, the 6 trillion yen that they're going to have to loan to us.
Yeah.
All right. Now, just the cost of printing up 6 trillion yen has got to be in the millions, or maybe hundreds of millions, because you got 6 trillion now. I looked this up on the Internet. 1 trillion U.S. dollars in $100 denominations, vacuum packed, as tight as you can pack them, is, I think, 868. This figure might be off. I don't remember. I don't have the figures in front of me. 868 40-foot cargo containers for $1 trillion in $100 bills. Now, China is going to have to give us 6 trillion yen to make 1 trillion U.S. dollars.
Yeah. They
right?
can't do that for electronic fund transfer. From their account into our account, and,
well, that's all it was, Roy. But let's walk through it and just see how ridiculous it is to say we borrowed $1 trillion from China. Okay,
yeah.
You got all this 6 trillion yen, and if it's got to be new builds, vacuum packed without a pallet, you know, or else you're going to need a lot more. You're going to need 6 times 868, which is almost 3,000 40-foot cargo containers just to contain the 6 trillion yen. Then you got to put it on the ships, and you got to bring it to wherever you got to bring it. I call it in the book the secret guy place. And the secret guy, he takes the 6 trillion yen and he converts it to U.S. dollars, because, see, we can't spend yen in this country. It's got to be U.S. dollars. So he's got to have $1 trillion U.S. dollars stacked up in this giant warehouse we talked about earlier that takes heating and air conditioning. You got to pay taxes on it, the cost of building this. So you're talking about hundreds of millions, if not $1 trillion, to borrow the actual cost of transporting, guarding with armed guards, storing under climate-controlled conditions. You see how ridiculous it gets?
Well, it's ridiculous. Obviously, nobody deals in moving hard currencies around on ships anymore.
Yeah, it on when you get to the government level, a country, you don't do actual money transfers.
No.
It's electronic. It's they put a plus on their ledger, and we put a negative sign, and that was it. We didn't print up secure. We didn't print up. We better not have, because remember, they didn't give us any of their paper, so they're not getting any of our paper. In the form of
their
bond securities.
They still expect an electronic return with a certain interest rate and other, return of their principal at the expiration of the
All right, think about it, though, Roy. Everything you just said, if they would have actually given us money, they would have been entitled to. But they never gave us a penny. It was all electronic, right?
Yeah, it's all funny money, so to speak.
It gets kind of simple once you think about it, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, no, but they could still turn around and demand that we credit them back. I guess then we could just...
All right, well, let's do that.
Create
some more. Well, look, we can do that right now. Two taps on the computer key, the keyboard. Here's your 6 trillion yen back.
Yeah, that's
And they're going to say, well, we want interest. Okay, few more taps on the computer. We're going to give you interest, even though you never gave us any money. It was all electronic. You understand why they went to quantitative easing, too? Because they've already proven that they can cut out the middleman and with the same effect without having any debt.
Yeah,
we don't owe anybody anything. And if we do, it's easier to pay them off. Aren't you going to say?
Yeah, there's why don't you tell us how we can eliminate the IRS? That's
well, you know, the IRS, when equity spending is openly acknowledged, because we're doing equity spending right now, it's just the powers that be aren't acknowledging it. But as far as eliminating the IRS, I don't think we're going to ever eliminate the IRS. Because remember, once you electronically generate these funds to pay federal expenditures, you've got to know where that money's going.
Yeah.
If it's a legitimate federal expenditure. Instead of the IRS coming after you and me, they're going to be going after and checking the people who receive electronically generated funds.
Yeah.
And make sure it's a legitimate federal expenditure. So they're not going to lose their job. Matter of fact, you're most probably going to have to hire more people, and we have the resources to hire all the people we want to check to see where the money's going, to do the audits and prove
When I said the IRS, what I really meant is how are we going to eliminate all federal taxation, which is what you said may be possible at some point. Well, politically,
just,
I don't know if it ever is, but how would work?
Just simple, you openly acknowledge, you start off with saying quantitative easing 2 and explain to the people what happened in quantitative easing 2. As we've talked about, not a ripple on the economic pond, $600 billion. And, you know, we don't need to borrow any money from anybody, not only in the United States, but this is true for every country. But here's another illustration before we go any further, and I'm going to catch you off guard a little bit. Again, do you realize that right now we have a one-world currency for over 100 years, correct?
Well, basically the U.S. dollar has served as the world currency, but I don't know if
You're real close, Roy, and you've come closer than most people, but it's paper.
Yeah.
Correct?
That's true. We aren't on the gold standard anymore. So we don't need to worry about how much gold is mined.
We have right now the one world currency. It's printed paper currency.
Yeah.
Now, the second part of the equation is that every country gives value to their paper currency the same way we do. And that's the people of the respective countries. We are what give value to our dollar.
Yeah.
And so forth and so on. The yen, it's the people. The peso, it's the people. It's not gold, it's not oil, because gold and oil is a commodity, not a currency. We, the people, give value to our paper currency. Now, you take that information, along with the quantitative easing too, the $600 billion, and you apply it to an international standard where everyone who joins this international, I guess you'd have to call it a monetary treaty. We already have one. That's how we kept track of Greece and Ireland. You tell them, you can't print any more money. You've got to do something. But then we loan them the money, and they're not going to pay us back, whoever they borrowed it from. It's all electronically generated anyway. That, too, is smoke and mirrors.
Yeah,
but it's going to spread worldwide. And every government who belongs to this treaty is going to be allowed to electronically generate funds to meet federal expenditures subject to audit, and everybody has got to apply by a certain rules. Now, this would be my understanding of the way it's going to happen.
But we no longer have to pay income tax and we have this world currency. How do we here's country A that has very limited benefits for their population, and country B wants to have universal health care, and they want to have, everyone retire at 50 or whatever, and they have very generous benefits. And how do we get all those various countries together and figure out why country B gets much better benefits than the citizens of country A?
know, we're going to have a treaty, and it's going to be our elected officials when we've got some really bright, talented people. And it's like I was talking about this very subject with a gentleman, and he brought up Greece. They want to work 4 days a week, 6 hours a day, retire
at 50. Good example.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. That's what he was telling me. That's just hearsay. I don't want to say that's what Greece is doing because I don't know, but that's what the gentleman told me. But it's demonstrative of what you just talked about. The International Monetary Treaty would have to address all those concerns. And you couldn't have country A with universal health care and country B not having universal health care. Now, something else, we've proven with quantitative easing too, unlimited financial resources, we can have universal health care with medicine, including a dental, at no cost to the people out of pocket. It's only cost to us through our federal government electronically generating the funds to pay for it. And the same goes for Social Security. We don't have to have a federal income tax to cover any of this anymore. As a matter of fact, we're not.
But effectively, with all those additional demands on the resources of the country, and they over time they can grow, but you are going to have some sort of inflation. I think it's going to be a lot greater than what it is now. And effectively, I would think that taxes would, in some degree, be replaced by much higher inflation, which is pretty unfair to people that are older, spent a lifetime saving and put a portfolio together and are on fixed income. And I don't know, you know, say I have a $500,000 retirement portfolio built up, but a hamburger now costs $1,000. It's not going to do me too much good.
Inflation has always been a problem, it always will be. And another word for it is greed, as we stated before. We're going to have to do something about inflation, but we have to do something about inflation now. Now, once you eliminate all forms of federal taxation, it's – all right, here's an example. You build rubber ducks with your company.
Yeah.
You no longer have to match Social Security. You no longer have to withhold federal income tax, and you no longer have to provide health care for your employees. So you've got a good 50 to maybe 70%, because the price of fuel is going to go down. Everything's going to go down. You've got a 50 to 70%, let's say a 30 to 50% rollback in the cost of your building your rubber duck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the capitalist country, you're going to reduce the cost of your rubber duck, a retail price, to reflect that savings, right?
Hopefully.
So it's the capitalist system. Yeah. So the capitalist system is going to, you're going to have automatically, right off the bat, after you eliminate federal income tax and you cover health care, medicine and dental and Social Security, you're going to have to at least a 30 to 30% rollback in all prices.
Hmm.
And you're going to have to watch out. Now, isn't that the way capital system works? Because these capitalists, which I am one, and I think it's the best system there has ever been, and it's proven, we know how to make money. We know how to compete with our neighbor. Cut the price. You give the consumer the best price. You're going to sell your product. So this guy that's got a 50 to 35% rollback in the cost of producing his rubber duck, he's not going to leave it at the same price. And if he does, somebody's going to come along and produce it at the cheaper price. And this other guy who doesn't want to come down on his price, he's going to be out of business. Right?
Yeah, that's probably right.
So you're going to have, and if the price of fuel goes down respectively, I'm sorry, I'm on a conference call. If it goes down respectively, you could go 50% reduction. The trick, once you think about this, the trick is not going to be to get a rollback in prices for consumer goods. It's going to be to keep the wages the same. Because our good old capitalist system is going to say, hey, well, you don't have to pay for health care anymore. Social Security's taken care of, and you got dental and medicine. You don't have any expenses at all. I'm going to cut your salary in half.
Yeah, that's exactly what some entrepreneur is going to say.
Yeah. We're going to go back to prices like in the 1800s, 1700s,
1800s. That wouldn't be a bad idea to. Of course, it's all just funny money anyway, like you say. If everything stays in line and prices stay in line with salaries and costs stay in line, I don't know. You know, unfortunately, we're just about out of time, and I'm not sure how all this works, but I would recommend that people read your book, because it certainly sounds fascinating, if for no other reason than to find out what poofoozle is, or is it poofoozy?
Yeah. Well, it's got commentary, it's got a novel, a fictional story, and then it's got commentary between the last two chapters, using the fictional story as talking points. And it's all about equity spending with a love story.
Tell people how they can get your book again and how they can get in touch with you.
It's available at AuthorHouse.com. That's my publisher. It's BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com, or any book retailer can order the book for you and mail it to you. Now, it's available online so far. Later on, it should be available in the bookstores, but right now, it's online.
And can you get that in electronic form as well as,
e-book? Yes, you can. Yes,
good.
You can.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a fascinating, and I'm very interested to read that love story. I got the gist of what your point is. I'm not sure at this point that I totally understand or have my arms around it. Like you say, you have to really sit back and think outside the box. And,
if you would just think about it, and once you grasp it, once you wrap your mind around it, it all falls into place so neatly, and you'll be just amazed at how
I'm
simple things can be.
I'm just surprised that none of the distinguished economists and all these people that are talking about deficits and that kind of stuff, nobody seems to have grasped this. I mean, people understand this quantitative easing and the fact that it is all just electronic transfers, but I've never heard anyone else come up with an idea quite like
nobody's
your own.
Explained it, right?
Yeah.
I'm the only one that I know of that is taking the time to explain it. Now, I can give you an idea of what I think it is. They underestimate our intelligence.
Yeah,
now, I'm an average guy.
Probably.
Yeah, that's the biggest part of the problem, because you have these Pulitzer Prize-winning economists about every year for the last 8 years that I can remember. They come out at one time during every administration and say, a balanced budget for a government is not feasible. Right?
Yeah.
And you heard that?
I've heard a lot of things like that.
And what they're saying is, you're just too dumb to explain it to. We're just going to keep printing the money and pretending all this trouble and everything, keep you scared half out of your wits, keep the price down, keep the economy choked down, and keep inflation under control. But you're just not intelligent enough to really grasp the reality of it all. And that's what they're saying to us. But remember, we have a former president and a former vice president on record as saying the deficit doesn't matter. And that's George W. Bush and Dick Cheney.
Huh. Yeah, I think
now, George W. Bush is a business graduate of Harvard, and I think Dick Cheney is Yale.
Yeah.
And most probably George H.W. Bush did some tutelage on this subject. It's not that they're not talking about it. They're not talking about it to the general public. They're not taking the time and effort to explain it to us, you and me, the common folk out there.
Well, I'm an economics major in college, and it is a very complex subject, and I could see how the average guy on the street, not to knock anyone, but it is very difficult to get your arms around. And economics is the decimal subject, as they always used to say.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that, Roy, because you're the guy that needs to be explaining it to people along with me. Now, an economics student, once you sit down and read the book, it'll give you some additional insight. But you're going to be the one that gets the bit in his mouth and runs with this thing, because you're going to understand it just as well as I do, or better, once you grasp the electronic transfer and the netherworld of finances. It's all smoke and mirrors once you get up into trillions of dollars.
Well, we'll definitely take a look at that book, and I recommend the listeners do also, and that's you can go to Amazon.com and look for the book About Equity Spending with a Love Story by Dean Windham, and I highly recommend that. And thank you so much for joining us today. And can't say I've totally grasped it yet, but it's certainly an interesting concept you've raised. And appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you being on your show.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later. Bye. Well, in several recent programs, we've talked about preparing for retirement at middle age, and it's never too soon to begin accumulating assets and planning how you wish to spend your retirement years. And I found a website called WealthyRetirement.com, which promises to teach investors how to invest for retirement the right way, lock in steady income on investments, shield your retirement assets from attack, and get the most from your money and from retirement. And our second guest today is Mark Lichtenfeld, Investment Director for Wealthy Retirement. He's also Associate Investment Director for the Oxford Club and author of Get Rich with Diamonds. Hello, Mark, and welcome to our program.
Hi, Roy. Thanks for having me. And just not to correct you, but it's Get Rich with Dividends, not Diamonds. I don't know anything about diamonds, so it's a Get Rich with Dividends.
Yeah, that's right. I misread.
Yeah, I don't want anybody speculating their retirement on precious stones. So.
Yeah, I thought you were going to tell us how to go down to Arkansas to that diamond mine that they try to get people to go to. Well, tell us a little about your organization and your website and what people can find there.
Sure. Well, Wealthy Retirement is a free website and free e-letter that you can sign up for, and it will send you the new columns as they come out during the week. And it's all about strategies for retirement, for getting the most out of your retirement. As you mentioned, you know, retirements right now are under attack by numerous forces out there, both you know, macroeconomic and government and the market. It's tough out there. So these are ways of protecting your retirement, of increasing your income, which is what everybody you know, is really looking for these days. And you know, we think it's a great little site. We do have specific stock recommendations, which can be found on another site, and that is a subscription, and that's at www.oxfordclub.com. So those are for the specific stock recommendations. But if you're looking for, you know, strategies and you know, kind of suggestions of stocks that meet certain criteria of the strategies we're talking about, that's all for free at wealthyretirement.com.
Yeah, that's an excellent connection you have, because I know I have an Oxford Club subscription, and you have some really good investment opportunities that you provide on that, not for the quick day trader or anything like that, but you give good recommendations in terms of stocks that have good investment potential. But just to get into a strategy, one that was in one of your recent letters, you're talking about constant income from professional dividend risers, and that sounded like a good strategy to me for planning for investing for retirement. Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Sure. Well, these are stocks that raise their dividend every single year. And so the reason that that's important is because it gives you a raise every single year. It's like having a job and getting a nice boost from your boss.
Have to do any work.
Exactly. And so what we want to do, though, is we want to find the companies that also have these dividend raises that are significant. You know, 1%, 2% doesn't do a whole lot for us. So we're looking at companies with track records of 10%, preferably, or even more. And when you do that, the yield that you'll receive on your original investment increases, you know, pretty significantly over the years. And if you're able to reinvest the dividend, if you don't need the income today and can automatically reinvest the dividend, which automatically buys new shares with your dividend, that compounds the number of shares you have, and the yield really increases very, very quickly. And in my book,
that's a wonderful strategy for somebody that's not yet retired but is planning for retirement in the next several years, and to keep that income growing like that.
Exactly. And in the book, Get Rich with Dividends, I talk about a system I have called the 10-11-12 system. And the goal is if you are retired and you need the income today, buying these kinds of stocks should generate an 11% yield within 10 years. But if you're not retired and you can reinvest the dividend, that it will generate an average annual total return of 12% over 10 years. And it's important to understand you won't get 12% in year one, year two, or year three, but the average over 10 years should be 12%. So it really can be very powerful. And 12% might not sound like a lot, but it triples your money in 10 years, and it generates 10 times your money in 20 years. So,
you know, if you're given what bonds are yielding these days.
Absolutely, that is true. But you know, for people who do remember, you know, a few years back when rates were higher, you know, 12% was nice, but it was nothing to write home about. But even in today's low rates, or any market condition, 12% compounded really does generate significant gains for you over the years. But you know, you do have to give it time. That's the important thing. You do need to be patient.
I like the way you call it DRIP, the dividend reinvestment plan. It's easy to remember.
Well, I didn't come up with that. I wish I did. I wish I'd coined that phrase, but it's a well-known phrase. And if you talk to your broker about it, you know, they'll certainly know what you're talking about. And actually, that's a good point to bring up is that, to me, the easiest way of doing this is through your broker, because there are ways of reinvesting dividends directly with the company. But the problem is most companies will charge you for that. They'll charge you commissions. They'll charge you fees. Whereas most brokers, you can do it for free. So if you buy a stock, let's say you buy 100 shares of Intel, just as an example. You buy it once, you pay your commission, and if it's with a discount broker, you might only pay $10. Instruct them to reinvest the dividend, and never buy another share in the open market. Over 10 years, you'll have a lot more shares, and you'll have paid $10 once for all those shares.
So
most brokers will not charge you for dividend reinvestment. So it's a good thing to talk to them.
Tell us how they can sign up for your service again, and also where they can purchase your book, which I call
sure.
Get Rich with Diamonds, but it's Get Rich with Dividends.
Sure. Well, you can get more information on the free e-letter Wealthy Retirement at www.wealthyretirement.com. More information on our subscription services at www.oxfordclub.com, and more information on the book at www.getrichwithdividends.com. Although maybe I should grab the URL for the diamonds one too. But
lots of choices. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Mark. We certainly appreciate your advice, and I'd highly recommend all three of those websites.
Thank you so much for having me, Roy. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.